Hello and welcome back to Feet First, a podcast focusing on the front of the pack in the UK trail and ultra scene. My name's Ed Scott, and in this episode, I'm bringing you the first of a double bill. That's right, there are two episodes dropping today, back to back. This first one is a conversation with Sarah Page, who just won the Spine Challenger South. That is the first 109 miles of the full spine. And the second episode is with Harry Firth, who is the men's winner of the Challenger North. That's the final 160 miles of the full spine. Hopefully these two episodes together make for a nice double bill to enjoy on your long run or your commute. And it was really great to start by catching up with Sarah, who has been on the podcast a couple of times. She came on a year ago after her win at the Arc of Attrition 100 Miler. She was actually the eighth guest of Feet First ever. And then a few months later, she came on after winning the South Downs Way 50 down here in the southeast of England. She followed that up with a third place finish at Lakeland 100, her A race for the year. And then later in the year, she found out that she got a place off the waitlist onto the Spine Challenger South. Sarah ran a really strong performance at the Spine. She finished in first place for the women's race and third overall behind first and second men, Jack Scott and Kieran Croke. She took an hour off the previous course record, although as we discuss in this podcast, course records at the Spine are a tricky thing to pin down. And in true Sarah Page style, she really does downplay the whole performance, but she is one of the top British women running at the moment, especially on longer, tough races like this. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what she does in 2025 and beyond. The day this episode drops, make sure you head to the website runfeetfirst.co.uk/live to check in with the Feet First live stream from the Arc of Attrition, where I'll be interviewing a number of athletes ahead of the 100 mile, which starts on Friday, and the 50 mile, which starts on Saturday. All right, that's everything from me. Just want to take a moment to thank the Centurion Ultra Running Store for supporting the show. You know the drill. Centurion are the leading independent ultra running retailer based right here in the UK. Your money, when you spend it at Centurion Ultra Running Store, is staying in the sport. It's helping to support the growth of the sport here in the UK. Right now, the January sale is on. So if you head to centurionultrarunningstore.com, you've still got time to grab some January deals. I'm going to be picking up probably a pair of new poles because I've got a race at Mount Fuji later this year, which I am not prepared for, and I have never run with poles, so I better get used to using those. But there's tons of great deals on there. If you want to get a discount on anything that's not on sale, you can use the code FEETFIRST10. That will really help support the podcast. It won't work on anything that's already discounted in the January sale, but make sure you check it out anyway, because there's some fantastic deals to be had. All right, that's enough from me. Let's tune in now to Sarah Page. Well, Sarah Page, welcome back to Feet First. What a pleasure to have you back for the third time.
Oh, thank you so much. I always get quite excited when I see your name pop up, thinking, yay, I'll have a chat with Ed. So yeah,
Thank you. That's very kind. Well, I mean, it's been quite a while since we last spoke. We spoke twice last year after you finished at the Arc of Attrition and then again at South Downs Way 50. But talk us through what the second half of 2025 looked like for you. I know you followed up South Downs Way with a third place finish at Lakeland. I mean, how was it stepping up to the mountainous races?
Yeah, so the South Downs Way 50 was like my middle sort of, let's just see what the 50's like as a distance and where my fitness is at. And the Lakeland was definitely stepping out of my, I say comfort zone, I'll probably say that quite a lot through the episode. But in terms of, it was completely navigated on your own watch, and I've got a bit of a reputation for not always being quite on point with my nav. So there was that. And then, yeah, definitely the steeper climbs and different, completely different environment and terrain. So yeah, that was an amazing event. Have you done Lakeland before or been up there?
No, I'm doing the 50 this year for the first time.
Oh, amazing. Well, it is something, yeah, it was incredible. Like the event, I think having the same place to start and finish is also, it brings something very different to the event. And I did a lovely, I know you're chatting to Charlotte Fisher and you know Charlotte Fisher, but so yeah, on the race, on course, I did a few miles with her, which was, I hadn't met her before, I hadn't spoken to her. And that was so lovely, like just a really lovely, just running with somebody. And actually I wasn't feeling, I had a bit of a bad gut at that, as one does on these things.
Yeah.
And she was looking strong, and it was just, it's just so, it's something quite special where you can say, I said to Charlotte, off you trot, like you're strong, off you go. And she went, are you sure? I'm like, I'm enjoying the chat. And I was like, no, you're looking good, off you go. And I don't think you can find another sport where you have that sport like that, just that that wholesomeness of what it is. So that was really epic. And then they had Jurassic Coast 50K. Again, that was October. I've never done a Maverick run. That's also a lot of fun. Start and finish at the same place too. And then in October I got someone had pulled out, so I was on the waiting list for the Spine Challenger South.
Right.
And I got the call up.
I was going to ask like when you set your sights on the spine, because you talk about getting outside your comfort zone and not being comfortable with nav. I mean, the spine has all of that in spades. So had it been on your radar for a while, or was this a new endeavor?
That's a really good question. I think having Damien Hall as your coach, and he is like a spine guru. I don't even really know how it came about. I think we sort of spoke about it maybe summertime, May time, and it was fully booked. And Damien was fairly optimistic, knowing that things happen or injuries happen and things change. And the Challenger South's at a weekend, and being a teacher, it is quite hard to find. You've got to try and make it work around school as well. And school were amazing and giving me the Friday and Monday off of the spine Challenger South, where for the Challenger North, I think it's more during the week. So sort of that landed there. And then it was literally around October half term, I found out that I had got it. And that meant that we could then go and do a bit of a recce during half term. And it sort of went, the training block was
that's
was
so good. Interesting. I just had Harry Firth on, who won the Challenger North in the men's race, and he only got in the race with 6 weeks to go as well. So maybe there's something to not overthinking it. He lives almost on the trail, so he was very familiar with it, and he had run the full spine the year before. How much of the course were you familiar with ahead of the race?
So I think I had recce'd maybe around 80 miles ish of the 109. And that at points, it was really great to have known where I was. Just not that I'm, again, I'm not great at recalling certain routes. And especially with the snow, I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe it's this way. But like, it wasn't snow in October. It was about 80 miles. But then it was the biggest highlight, I think, was knowing when Hepton was coming up. That was like a good push to kick in. I had done up to maybe the finishing point of 80 miles, and I knew that I had like another 15 to go. I think it must be, anyway, near or near about, and then I knew that that was like the end stretch. So, it's really hard to recce, especially when it's so far away.
Yeah.
But you just do what you can, and if you can, then great. And if you can't, you just have the adventure even bigger.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Damien Hall is your coach, who has obviously a lot of experience at this race and on this trail. Aside from helping you prep physically, were there any tips or words of wisdom that Damien was able to impart ahead of the race that helped you?
Oh, he has so many words of wisdom. And now you put me in the spot that I do him proud in terms of recalling all of his words of wisdom. But he's just very calming. And it's because I can be a bit, it might be a surprise, Ed, but I can be a bit flappy and a little bit like, oh gosh, this is too big a challenge. And what am I taking on? And he's just calm and just reassures, and the kit list is quite renowned for it being quite thorough, and he very kindly lent me some kit. And I guess I had the sort of doubt because of my being a southerner and not quite having the sort of terrain, just the reassurances. He's a man full of amazing wisdom and words. I feel very grateful that he's my coach.
Let's touch on the kit then, actually. I mean, you mentioned it is such a central part of this race. What did you have, just for the listeners who are interested, what did you have on your feet? What were you wearing? And was there any piece of kit that really like made the difference or that you wished you'd had that you didn't have? Like, how did kit play out?
So I broke my poles.
Oh, right.
By the end of the race, I had one pole, but even that was broken. But to be honest, you don't know it was breaking. Like, I don't, again, the terrain here, it's like up a grassy hill. You're like, oh, it seems absolutely fine. And then you're shoving it in flagstones or deep snow and not knowing what's underneath. And yeah, so I broke a pole, which was, that was a bit of kit that I was, I was like, oh, a bit gutted. And I was going up the last few hills, like literally like one-handed going in the side of me.
Like Gandalf.
So that was fun, yeah. But now, I was so lucky. Like, I've got not, I often get blisters or loose toenails, and I don't think either I've got no toenails left or actually the my feet are in pretty good shape. I was wearing, I'm going to say these words wrong, so apologies, injury toe socks.
In Gingy?
Yes.
There we go.
I wore those socks, and then I had deck shell knee length socks, and I had the shorter ones I picked up at halfway. I wore Innovate trail talons that were great. I do love wearing Hokas, but just with the terrain. And I wore the Innovate ones, and then it was a real mixture, to be honest, Ed. I had Montane leggings that were super thick. I had a new Montane insulated jacket that I put on as my spare layer in the last, I don't know, maybe last 4 to 5 miles, which saved the race. That was an amazing layer to put on. The kit I was wearing was really good. Don't get me wrong, like there had been kit laid out for, if I said about 4 weeks in the sitting room, finding a corner behind the sofa and the chopping and the changing, but that's okay, and it worked in the day.
and how were the conditions that you were navigating with all that kit? Were they as you'd hoped, as you'd expected? Talk me through, you know, as a fellow Southerner, how brutal were the conditions that you found yourself facing?
I've tried to think about that quite a lot, because you don't want it to like come away from your memory too early.
Yeah.
But on the Saturday, it was just, it's hard to find the words to describe it. It was blue skies, fresh snow, and it was cold, but it was just stunning. It wasn't easy on the foot. I hate doing strength work, and Max helps me with my strength work. And one of the exercises that I've been doing is to lift my knee up with a kettlebell on my foot. Wow. And then lower it as a hyper extension thing, is it called? And honestly, I don't want Max to hear this, and I hope he doesn't listen back, but I was quite grateful for that exercise, because it actually, through the snow, because it was hard, but I kept reminding myself to like look up, because you don't want to just have I just wanted to look up, and the sunset was stunning. And I ran with a guy called Rich, and I was like, Rich, look at the sunset. And so Saturday was absolutely stunning. Sunday, not so much.
A real change of conditions.
Yeah, like 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was just like sleet and rain and walking like the ice. And I was really poor, and Damien always says, be bothered. I was like, oh yeah, there's a bit of ice, but I'm sure it'll go in a minute. No, I'm definitely sure the ice will disappear soon. Definitely soon.
Yeah.
And then like I saw the guy in front of me, Rich, putting his spikes on, and I was like, oh, for goodness sake, I'm just going to put my spikes on. And I did. So the ice and the slush, it was like river walking. And actually, as a child, my dad's an ex-teacher, and used to do these really, awesome camps, and one of the camps would be like different stances and stuff, and some would be walking through rivers, and I was literally at the top of one of the hills like walking through slush and cold water, and I was like, oh Dad, I'm so grateful for all those little river walks I did, like finding things to be glad about in that moment. But yeah, the weather on Sunday, just coming off the hill, I was like teeth chattering coming off, so yeah, I was very glad that I was just doing the 109 and I didn't have another 100 plus to do.
Yeah, people talk about this race as being, I think that phrase that Damien had, be bothered, that's a brilliant phrase, because it's a race where little mistakes, particularly in the full spine, but even in the shorter ones, little mistakes can really compound, I guess, and cause problems later in the race. Were there any issues you had to navigate, any low spots or moments where you thought, oh, I'm not sure I can keep doing this?
Oh, it was the falling over on the ice in the last section. And at night there was one diversion, and we had to phone headquarters because we hadn't quite clocked where the diversion was. That wasn't like a low point, that was like a learning point, because it was like, oh, I've never had to phone headquarters, like it is very bad conditions out here, we need to be safe. So that was, I've never had to do that before. But yeah, no, the biggest, well, one of the biggest learnings physically was like, if you see ice, you stop and you put on your spikes and you don't be a donut thinking it's going to be gone in a few meters. And I fell, I guess the injury I've got most, I've got I've got some massive, my shins on my coccyx. I've got some, and a poor people that I teach, I was sitting next to him in the classroom, and by accident, he just, with his, like, you know, swinging his legs, he kicked the bruise on my leg. Oh. I just went, oh, God. Oh. And this poor year five boy just went, oh, I'm so sorry. And I was like, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. I only won a 110-mile race last week.
Yeah. Oh, poor thing. Yeah, no, I think my reaction, oh, yeah. So I got a lot of bruises, and that's because I don't want to say I was lazy, but I just, yeah, I wasn't bothered in the moment. I just wanted to get it done. And actually, I should have just got it done. The guy that came second was like literally marching past me in spikes, and I was like, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
But no.
Thank you to Trailskin for supporting the podcast. Born on the trails in 2024, Trailskin crafts all natural, high performance skincare products designed for runners by runners. Each of their products is made to protect, soothe, and support your skin through the miles, whether you're grinding through an ultra or just hitting the hills chasing your daily dose of freedom. I have been absolutely loving the Trench Foot Cream. It is as glamorous as it sounds, but with the wet conditions that we're facing here in late January in the UK, I need to keep my feet protected. And the Trench Foot Cream provides that brilliant layer of protection, avoiding and reducing the onset of maceration and blisters. So make sure you head to trailskin.com and you can use the code FEETFIRST20 to get 20% off your next order with Trailskin and £5 store credit towards your next purchase after that. That's FEETFIRST20, all one word, to get 20% off at trailskin.com. Well, let's talk a bit about the race, the competition, I guess, because you led pretty much from the off, and it was 11 hours until you get to that first aid station. So, you know, as someone who's used to a more conventional ultra where you have an aid station every few hours, maybe, what was that experience of going, you know, 40 plus miles without any kind of support?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the hardest block was from Hepton, and I think the longest block was just over 30 miles. And you're absolutely right. It's not like a 30 miles where you can be done in sort of 5 to 6 hours. It's a long stint. I had an on pouch. I think it was quite amazing. It's very common for that sort of race to be having these, like, and I, at Hepton, I packed a lunchbox, packed supper, packed breakfast, you name it. And then I had a litre and a half rather than just carrying a litre. And actually on the recce, I knew that there was a tap at Gargrave. Again, that was an amazing bit of the jigsaw to know where the tap was in terms of refilling before doing another stint. But you're absolutely right. That presented a different challenge in terms of self-care and discipline. I did just as in discipline and making sure I looked after myself for that period of time, because yeah, I ate every half an hour. I had an electrolyte tablet every hour. It was a different mindset to looking after yourself for that period of time.
Yeah.
I only did 109 miles, like those that did the whole thing. Like, honestly, I can't wait to hear some of the podcasts coming out about the whole thing, because I'm going to be blown up. My head will be blown away with what their adventure was.
Yeah, I still can't get over Sebastian Reichon finishing in a bin bag. I think that's just that's iconic. It needs to be framed and put on a wall.
Yeah.
The bin bag.
No glamour here.
Yeah, exactly. Another really defining aspect of this race is obviously the darkness. There's a lot of it at this race. I know you have a plenty of experience running in the dark, given your constant 5 a.m. alarm bell running down in Sussex. But in the conditions that you find yourself at in the spine, obviously that takes things up a notch in terms of running in the dark on your own. So talk me through that experience. Was it scary at all? Like, in my mind, it's quite a scary thing to be out on the hills like that at night.
Yeah, I mean, I was again very lucky to have. I said to Damien before the race, "You reckon I'll run with anybody?" He's like, "You might do, but don't pin anything on it." And I actually ended up running a huge proportion of the race with an incredible human being called Rich, and so I ran a lot of the miles with him in darkness. But I, as a chatter, what was so nice is that we'd chat some, but we ran a lot of miles in silence too, which gave it sort of just quite some calming, and just just lucky to have had someone next to me through the night. And you are right, I do a lot of miles in the darkness at the 5:30 runs, although Rob calls them 5 a.m.s, but they start at 5:30.
Oh, that's easy.
but I think that's the start of the day, and you're seeing the sun come up. And I did one run, one night run before, but I'm not great at the night. Like, I do get tired, and that was definitely a worry. And I think that's what worries me about anything bigger, as in sort of the sleep deprivation. And it was like, I was trying to count the hours from when we left Hepton. I was like, oh, do you know what? Maybe we'll have an early sunrise. Maybe it'll be 6 o'clock today because we're high up. And I told Rich, thinking, oh, do you reckon we'll get an early sunrise today because we're slightly higher? And he was like, no. Like, do you not think 6 or 6:30? He was like, no. Probably more like 8. And I was like, oh, Rich, you've just knocked back darkness 2 hours. So then we gave ourselves like a, so like we were clocking the miles. I was like, you know, let's see how many miles we can do in that time. But there's also something quite magical about the nighttime run and the calmness. I wouldn't choose to do it all the time because but just on the occasions that I do it, you just embrace it and just go, what have you got? And it was good, yet the weather turned and it was hard.
Yeah, I mean, the weather is so all-encompassing at the spine, isn't it? Has this race whetted your appetite at all for potentially doing one of the longer races at the spine, the Challenger North or the full shebang?
My friend Ben Potts did the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I waved him past Gargrave on my way home. And I seen it like mile 72, thinking, you know, we're still looking at another 200 miles. and he said to me, I'll ask you a week afterwards. And we haven't actually caught up just yet. And I did start watching the spine YouTube videos, which are amazing.
Yeah.
And I think for my girls to show them the scenes of it and the how beautiful and how vast it was. But going back to your question, I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
But there is a hesitation, and I don't know what that hesitation is. For me, it's the logistics and the planning. Like, I found the logistics and planning before the race and throwing Christmas and the end of term quite a lot. And that's not an excuse. Like, you know, if you're, that's what you do. But it's quite a daunting distance. So no for now.
Yeah, never say never.
Never say never, yeah.
I don't think anyone would judge you for thinking maybe not.
Yeah.
One question I did want to ask about is the subject of the course record. You ran 29:03, which is ostensibly the fastest time run by women on that course. But I know that course records at the spine are a tricky thing to pin down. So how are you thinking about that time in the context of that race's history? Do you think of it as course record, or is it just you won the race on the day? Where do you sit on that question?
I won the race on the day. It's so hard. Like, there was two diversions, but I guess one diversion that was quite significant, not going up Penny Gant at the end.
Yeah.
And I guess, you could argue that the weather was really bad, so then the conditions balance out the course diversion. But Max and I chatted to Damien about rough times, and he said, don't get too hung up on the times because you just don't know the conditions.
Yeah.
And Max and I had sort of gone through it. Max loves a little bit of data and logistics. And he was like, oh, let's, you know, why don't you go for sort of 30 to 35 hours? But to be honest, the weather was so bad, I wasn't even really looking at my watch. As in, I was only looking at my watch for when it was saying o'clock and 30 in terms of eating.
Yeah.
So I had no idea when I finished. I had no idea. While I didn't know what the record was, I don't know if that makes me sound not very good on my sort of admin, but it was the first race that I'd done on that sort of scale. So I didn't know what the record was. I wasn't aware of my time, and I finished, and it was amazing. So it's all good.
It certainly was amazing. It's such an incredible performance. I'm curious to know what's kind of next for you, because in my mind, you're one race away from having taken a podium at what I think of as the British majors, which is Arc of Attrition, Lakeland 100, South Downs Way 100. It's just UTS that's missing. Is that a race you're thinking of giving a go?
Oh, Ed, do you know what? I am doing UTMB this year.
Yeah.
And I was going to do the UTS 100K, But that sold out really, really quickly. And then there was space for the UTS 100 miler. And I was just like, I know it's like the end of May and then there'd still be time to recover for the UTMB. But there was just, to be honest, we were sort of looking at other events. And then there was one in Austria called the Mozart 100.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a bit of a classic, isn't it?
So actually, so UTS is maybe a one day, but we're off on holiday.
Oh, nice.
We sort of sell it to Max. Look at this place. Doesn't it look beautiful? Oh, my goodness. There's a race. Shall we tie it in?
So when is that race?
May.
May. Oh, perfect.
May so half term. So it falls in, yeah, May half course. Term.
Yeah. So. And how are you feeling about the challenge of taking on the UTMB? You earned your spot quite a while ago, obviously, with the ARC. So you've had a lot of time to think about that race, right?
Yeah. I had a friend, a running buddy, who I run with here, and he did it this year, just gone.
Yeah.
And he said it was like nothing else. Have you been out there?
No, not yet.
I don't know. I go through waves of... what do I feel? I feel slightly overwhelmed by the scale of it. There's something quite magical being on a start line with like 150, 200 people, because it's just so intimate in terms of what you're going to experience. And I'm choosing to go out and have an adventure with thousands and thousands on the start line. So it'll be incredibly different. It'll bring a different set of challenges. I might even bring spare poles because that was not fun. But I think I still feel quite new to this ultra running world. So every event that I do, it's just all the learnings, and I feel so lucky to be able to take part in them and to have the memories that I'm making through this. So yeah, we'll see what it brings. I'm not sure I've answered it very clearly, but I think that's because my head's a little bit fuzzy about it.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I'm sure whatever experience you have, it will be something worth having and worth reflecting on.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to my partner and the girls are going to come out, and that will be something quite special. Damien said he did it 1 year without the kids and 1 year with, and yeah, I was like, oh yeah, to have the girls out there will just be something as a family that's...
Yeah.
Amazing. So yeah,
it'll nice. Be different. Well, best of luck at that race. It's such a it's such an internationally competitive race. I mean, even to come top 100 at a race like that is an achievement, but I'm sure whatever you'll have an amazing experience.
Yeah, I think but that takes away the pressure, right? Is it just go and be Sarah Page on the trails.
Yeah, be Sarah Page and then just win and no one sees it coming.
Oh my god, we'll see. But yeah, it's we'll see. It is funny because we just have a bit of a jagers in, like, because it's, you know, who's Sarah, like the southerner, who's Sarah Page?
Yeah, get that on a t-shirt, who's Sarah Page?
Yeah. No, it's just a bit of fun.
Nice one. Are you returning to any of the British races? Are you doing any British races this year, just as warm-ups or teasers or anything?
Yeah, so there's like a gap in I think there's like a natural gap between now and May.
Yeah.
And I do quite like to have something just to sort of see where my fitness is at. I know Charlotte Fisher quite likes to sort of race to keep the motivation and things going. So I just need to have a little look. There's a Ultra X. They do like a spring series near where I live.
Yeah, it's like Hazelmere sort of.
Yeah.
Way. Yeah.
Yeah. That was my first ever like competitive ultras I did in 2023. Nice. The 75K. So I might go back to that one, although I don't like to go back to races twice, but if I look at it like a bit of a local see where I'm at type thing.
Yeah.
I know Maverick do quite a lot of events around here. There's obviously the South Downs Way 50. I might get St. James is always super supportive, and I think that's where I sort of landed my first 100 miler. It's Centurion have got quite a special place in my heart, so now I need to sort of get my act together. It was always spine, and then
I think you can be forgiven for taking it easy for a bit.
Yeah, it's quite hard to sit still.
Nice one. Well, wherever you end up racing, I'm sure it would be very exciting. I've heard lots of good things about Ultra X. I do. Yeah, I'm doing a race called the Moyleman, which is in Lewis, actually, not far from you. Well, other end of the South Downs, but that's
how far is that one?
It's a trail marathon, but you can do it as a relay. So I'm doing it with my friend as a two each doing a half marathon, and you change over at you know where you cross the train tracks on the South Downs Way 50.
Yes.
You change there.
Are you racing it?
Well, we'll see. I ran it a few years ago, the marathon, and I managed to come fifth, which I was really happy with. But
amazing.
I'm nowhere near as fit as I was. And then that's in March, and in April I'm going to do the 70K at Mount Fuji in Japan. So that's my big race for the year. Well, wow. My big race for the spring. Yeah.
For the spring.
Yeah. But that's not that's not a go and be competitive thing. That's not that I could be, but it's not about going and running as hard as I can. It's about enjoying a race in a different country, really.
And making it into a holiday, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it should be good. Well, Sarah, really good to catch up. Always nice to chat. I know you're going to be down at the ARC next week, so I'm sure we'll cross paths there as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you down there.
It's going to be good. It's going to be fun.
It's quite fun. It's really fun having had done my race and my adventure and now seeing my friends getting themselves all worked up about kit. And I'm like, oh, was I like that? Probably was, but it's much more fun seeing them get themselves and all the kit pictures and stuff. So yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it.
Are you just spectating?
So Max has got some clients running like in different sections, and then we're going to crew our friend Big Rob. Well, Max is crewing. I'm going to be like at the start and finish at the crew points, going come on.
Nice.
And then Max is doing 25 on Sunday, so we're there for the whole weekend.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
What's the weather like? I haven't seen the weather yet, to be honest.
I think it's going to be wet and mild, which could be good or could be bad. Really depends what you want. Certainly won't be too cold.
That's what I said when I was running on the spine. I was like, if we're going through this, everybody else is. So at least it's going to be wet and mild for everyone.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I'm looking forward to seeing you. And then the running show.
It's a busy time, January. And then February and March, nothing. Nothing happens.
Recovery.
Yeah. I've just got one more question, and I just wanted to reflect back on the spine. And I know you've done a deeper debrief on your podcast, Trails, Tales and Fails. So I'll put a link to that. What do you think, though, is the most important thing that you got right in this race?
Oh, Ed, sometimes you ask really good, thought-provoking questions.
Sometimes.
And I'm like, I wish I had an answer ready. Right, the biggest takeaway from the race.
Well, what's the thing you think you got right? Like, you won the race, obviously, and you ran, you know, debates aside, you ran it on the fastest time ever. So what do you think contributed to that, beyond just being tough as nails?
I would say... it might not be a biggie, but for me, with my track record of food on ultras, I would say the thing that I got right this time, although it wasn't perfect, I would say the thing that I got right was food. And yeah, that would be, that sounds like a bit of a lame one, but actually for me,
it's huge.
At Lakeland 50, I didn't even eat a meal at the 50 mile mark. I couldn't touch food. I hacked in for quite a long time, but I was like, I had a proper meal, I had two glasses of squash, I had a cup of tea, so those sort of, I'd say food. I do wish I had a slightly better answer, but I think
food's
for
a
my
good
journey
answer.
It was the self-care and food. I sort of feel like I reflect and I think of the things that I could have done better, easier.
Yeah, that's only natural, isn't it? But it's good to take stock of what you did well, because you clearly did something well.
The food and possibly the mindset, because I didn't know what was ahead. It's quite freeing. I was quite determined to complete it because of what it was and what it meant to me, and personally, not in terms of the competing. And it was actually talking to you. I don't want to feel like I've been like lighthearted on some of the answers, but I have actually found it quite hard to process and digest it all, because it was even on our pod, it's a lot of laughing and sort of making fun of myself, not fun of myself in terms of who I am, but just like, yeah, laughing. And I'll tell you something that I haven't been able to do yet, and that will fit into context of sorry, you probably wanted to get rid of me. You was tying up and I'm still chatting.
I've got
away.
Nowhere to go, Sarah, don't worry.
But on the tracker, you get loads of people can write messages to you. And I haven't shared this on our pod actually, but I haven't actually been able to open it all up and read, because I sort of opened up one layer and I saw some nice messages, and then I just folded it back. And that's not that I'm ungrateful. I'm incredibly grateful for all the messages, but I think it will possibly land on the scale of the adventure that I had. So it really was something that I won't forget. Yeah.
Nice one. Well, I'm sure that in time you'll find it within yourself to give those a read. I'm sure there's a lot of special messages in there.
Well, I will, and I can't wait to. It'll be just when I'm ready to sort of, like, fully absorb it.
Yeah, so. Totally. It's still raw. I mean, when did you finish? A week ago?
It was a week ago, yeah. I was driving back last time last week. So, yeah.
Amazing. Well, I look forward to catching up again soon, and congratulations again, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me, Ed. See you soon.